Okay, the Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for Wednesday, April 14th, 2010 will come to order. We have one bill on the agenda today. Senator Pogemiller's Senate File 2874, State Government Streamlining. And I think Senator Chaudhry's committee is just about done, so we should have some members from there coming in here in just a little bit. So, Senator Pogemiller, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate you being willing to hold a meeting today to get this bill processed.
These are extraordinary times, Senator Pogemiller.
Members, this is a re-referral from Senator Rest Committee, and it's a bill that, to kind of summarize, is a employee-empowered process for attempting a reorganization of two agencies, DEED and DOLLE. It may result in a single agency, but not necessarily. And the idea in kind of a brief, you have a set of managers get together and talk about it. You get a set of line employees get together and talk about it, and a set of outside observers talk about it. They have a period of time through about October to come up with some ideas, and then they start to jointly meet, or a subset of those three groups starts to jointly meet to kind of put it all in one consensus package. And if they come up with something interesting, they present it to the governor and the legislature next January, and these two agencies would then be eliminated, assuming that the governor and the legislature acted upon those recommendations and put something in place to take care of the various functions involved in these two agencies. I want to make clear that there have been audits, but I'm not going to highlight these. There have been audits in 08, 09, and 10 that talk about some of the issues related to these agencies in terms of focus, in terms of management and money control that need to be considered. That's not the major focus of the bill. This is not a criticism of the current activities of the agencies. This is an attempt to try to take a fresh look at how we deliver the services of those two agencies, and is there a more streamlined and effective way to accomplish those objectives. And page 1 and 2 of the bill do outline what the goals and the outcomes that we're looking for out of the activities that are currently be functioning performed by these two agencies. Section 3 on page 3 starts to lay out the membership of these various groups that I just described, sets up the timelines for their discussions, and what these groups are supposed to do is come up with recommendations for how to put an organization in place that will best accomplish Sections 1 and 2 of the bill. So Sections 1 and 2 of the bill are not your run-of-the-mill, here's what we think is going on in state government. It's not a purpose clause. Sections 1 and 2 are the objectives and outcomes that we expect these task forces to gear toward in their discussions with regards to reorganization. You'll see, and I wasn't going to go through every detail, but you'll see that there's fairly broad representation on these groups of both inside and outside knowledgeable experts. The idea is to come up with something that would be built into the next budget by the next governor. But the key point is nothing really happens here ultimately unless the next legislature and the next governor accept recommendations to make some changes to these agencies. It's likely that the bill is directed towards streamlining from 2 to 1 agencies. I think it is kind of worded that way. But there is nothing that guarantees that that will be the recommendation. Senator Tomasoni asked me at one point, well, what if they recommend that we need 3 agencies to do this? That could happen. And then it will be up to the committees of the legislature and the governor to decide whether that makes sense. I don't think that will happen. I think there will be some realignment here. But it could be 2 agencies. It could be 1. I think it clearly will lead to a flattening out of the organizations, as the private sector has done in the past few years. So again, the purpose of the bill is not to be critical of the current administration or previous administrations. It's a forward-looking piece of legislation to try to accomplish some streamlining and looking to the future for both our job creation and services to workers in the state through unemployment and work readiness and so forth. I think I passed out two charts that show what the two organizations currently look like. A lot of boxes. And that organization chart in itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but it is something that it does indicate that if you look at kind of some of the boxes, you kind of go, well, couldn't there be some joint activity across agencies here? And maybe some of your licensing functions versus regulatory functions versus job creation functions, maybe there's a better alignment of all of that. So that's what the bill is headed toward. I am told that by the time, if this gets to the full committee, there might be a minor fiscal note related to, $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 related to the activity of these various work groups. I'll deal with that when I get to full finance, if there is a fiscal note. That's what the bill does. I do have brief testimony from AFSCME and MAPE, who are supportive of the bill. I should mention that Article 2 of the bill is not directly related to the rest of the bill, but it's Taxpayer Accountability Act that I have an amendment to based on discussions with the administration to make it work a little better maybe. That was added on at the suggestion of Labor and Senator Murphy, frankly. He apparently, Transportation Department, has implemented the Taxpayer Accountability Act as it's written here, and apparently it's been fairly successful. And so the discussion was, well, maybe we should do that more broadly. And that gets to the issue of if you're going to contract out services, you want to make sure that there's nobody in the current agencies that can do it as well and less expensive than contracting out. And we always hear about this battle between labor and management as to whether there's too much contracting. What this proposal does is tries to put a little rigor to the discussion, and then let's move on. I don't think anybody, perhaps AFSCME and MAPE might, but I'm not sure there's anybody who disagrees that if there are outside experts that are not in the agencies and can do something more effectively for a better price, okay, maybe that makes some sense. The issue is, though, if we have actually people on payroll who can do this work and can do it very effectively and maybe even less expensively, well, why aren't we doing that? And so that's what the idea behind Article 2 is. Let me then, Mr. Chairman, if I could turn over to MAPE and AFSCME real quick, or I could stand for questions now, whichever way you want to do it. I think that's hearing from MAPE and AFSCME might clarify some things.
Okay. And Senator Pogler, just to pause for a moment. We have a quorum that's present. Senator Pogermiller, maybe some of this stuff ended up happening like this because of the combining of agencies and the layering of jobs. And so, like you said, there's a possibility that the recommendation might come back and say that it would be more efficient and more nimble to have more than two agencies. And I think that's a very real possibility. Also, I just want to comment on your Taxpayer Accountability Act. We had a little demonstration project between Hibbing and Chisholm on a bridge where the state employees did the job instead of contracting it out. And I believe the number was over $100,000 was saved as a result of it by using the state employees as opposed to contracting it out. So, and there are instances where contracting out does save money, but it's really a good idea to find out which one's cheaper. So does anybody have any questions, Senator Pogermiller, before we go to the witnesses? Okay, who wants to go first?
Mr. Chairman, good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee, and say your name for the record, please.
My name is Elliot Side. I'm the executive director of AFSCME Council 5, representing 43,000 state, local government, and nonprofit employees. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senator Pogermiller's bill, Senate File 2874. AFSCME Council 5 supports 2874. To reorganize state services related to business and employment. We believe our members will have a key role in the process and the outcome. We believe that workers will embrace change if they have security. And I want to suggest to you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, some principles of reorganization that we've embraced that we think are embodied in this bill that are just good economics. And if they sound familiar to you and you want to read more about them, it's because they're derived from the writings of the great post-war economist Demings. So let me share those with you. We believe if you give workers job security, they will embrace change. I mean, if you think of the current environment that we're in with 9.7% unemployment nationally, 7.8% unemployment here in this state. Underemployment of double digits. Nobody wants to put themselves out of a job and into this job market, and particularly if you look in greater Minnesota, where the number of job seekers to a job is at least 8-1, sometimes 10-1, and where the average wage for that job is $7, no one's going to talk themselves out of a job. But if they have security, they're going to try to figure out, be more open about having input into how things could change. Number two, we believe that one drives fear from the workplace by guaranteeing that every worker will have a job with equal or greater pay and benefits after reorganization. So we're not saying that somebody has to have the job they currently have, because that may not make sense in a new organization or in change of the way we do business. But we also think then there's going to be other jobs that are created to do the work in a different way, and that workers who've already been involved in the work should have a chance to train and retrain for those new opportunities. If that job is different then and requires new skills, we believe that the employer needs to provide training that the workers need. Adding more people to the unemployment rolls is not the answer to this question. The answer to the question is to involve the workers in change. When you have a reorg in the environment that we're in, one ought to be moving resources to the point of service. And Senator Pogue-Miller's bill, in fact, suggests that resources move to the point of service with the public or with the clients, whatever the situation may be. That's where the activity is. To keep the clients or customers satisfied with the work, resources should be moved to that point of service. That's the third principle. A fourth principle is to flatten the organizational hierarchy, and you heard Senator Pogue-Miller mention that. We need less people at the top and more frontline workers. We're not saying to get rid of all managers. That's ridiculous. That's not what we're talking about. But we are saying to flatten the organizational hierarchy, move resources to the front line of service, and have more frontline workers, particularly in a time of strained resources. Involve frontline workers, a fifth principle. Involve frontline workers in identifying ways to cut costs and improve efficiency in service delivery. The people who deliver service to the front line are the ones who are the experts in delivery of that service. They have to deal with the public. They have to deal with the issues that in the delivery of the service every day. Certainly they know the service. My members know the service better than I do, unless I've delivered that service. And I would suggest that's for any of us. The people who deliver the service know how to do it the best. Let's include them as part of the solution, not part of the problem. And finally, realize that in an actual reform, that sometimes upfront investment is required to achieve long-term efficiency. We might have to invest in greater technology. I'll give you one example. My council, Council 5, is the merger of three former AFSCME councils. We had three separate membership systems all doing the same thing differently. We had to invest money to buy a program so that we would have a single membership system. That actually cost us money up front, but will save us money over time. That's an efficiency that's created, and you can come up with that if it's electronic medical records or any number of different pieces to do that. So we have to remember that this is not just a budget cut, but at times an upfront investment. And we believe Senator Pogue-Miller drafted this bill with these principles in mind. His bill requires an employee participation committee and reduces the number of deputy commissioners, assistant commissioners, and certain unclassified positions. The other thing that the bill does is it requires an economic feasibility study for contracts of over $100,000 for all state agencies. This process is known as the Taxpayer Accountability Act, and it would require state agencies to do a state employee cost comparison before entering into privatization contracts. You heard an example from Senator Tomassoni, just one example on the range of that. Let me give you one other example. The Department of Transportation has already been required to comply with the act, and the bill was supported by Senator Murphy here and Representative Hornstein in the House. Here's an example of how it works. State workers stripe roads for about 8 cents a stripe. Private vendors charge 31 cents. The law prevents outsourcing work that we can do better, faster, and cheaper. That would just be one example, and the reason we know it is because the law requires this to be examined. So for these reasons, we support this bill that Senator Pogue-Miller is suggesting. We think it will result in employee participation, better outcomes of delivery of service, more satisfaction for customers, and frankly, job security for the people who deliver the services, and will promote innovation in the workplace rather than stifle innovation in the workplace. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, just before I move on, just out of curiosity, what I understand the guiding principle you're talking about here, and they're all good guiding principles. But is there something happening within the agencies or not happening within the agencies that you support the change that Senator Pogola-Miller might be suggesting?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the last 7.5 years under this administration, the union has been suggesting that the state workforce, which, by the way, is the 11th leanest in the nation and one of the most productive, high-quality workforces in the nation, that we were prepared to sit down and have discussions about how to deliver services even better. And we've suggested this over and over again. Frankly, we did it under the Carlson administration. We certainly did it under the Perpich administration. We even did it quite a bit in certain departments under the Ventura administration. This administration has not been interested in having those conversations. They've been looking for budget cuts. The one meeting I can think of that we had very high up in the administration, myself and the president of our council, Mike Busing, they were looking for ways to deal with some reform and look for some budget numbers. This was last year. We sat down and went over how to develop a quality process, an efficiency process to get things done. When they realized it wouldn't result in short-term budget cuts, but rather require a long-term process, you could just watch people's eyes roll over. They weren't interested any further. We're interested in working with any public employer or private nonprofit employer who wants to sit down with us and produce services in the most efficient way possible. It's to our benefit, it's to the employer benefit, and it's to the services, to people whose services we provide, it's to their benefit. And we're ready to do that anytime, anywhere. And we think we're already doing a pretty darn good job, 11th leanest in the nation.
But do you believe that the whole system needs to be changed in order to do that?
I don't think everything needs to be changed. I think that the best thing to do is, the way Senator Pogola-Miller is suggesting it, Mr. Chairman and members, is to sit down, to take a look at what an agency is doing, what its mission is, what it's doing to deliver on its mission, and then involve the workers and other stakeholders in talking about how to best deliver that mission. I think you're going to find some savings in that. You'll certainly, it's always good to look for other efficiencies. But I would have to agree with former Finance Commissioner John Gugno that I don't think it produces large amount of savings. But on the margins, I think it can make a difference. And on behalf of the workers, we always want to deliver service in the most efficient way possible.
Okay. And more effectively.
Absolutely.
Rich.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. I'm Richard Kajewski, the Legislative Affairs Director for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. We would like to thank Senator Pogola-Miller for his leadership in attempting to streamline government while improving services and economic growth through Senate File 2874. Over the past 2 years, MAPE and its nearly 13,000 state professional employees have spent countless hours working to identify waste in state government. Through that process, we have worked with legislators and leadership to identify areas that we believe the state of Minnesota could be more efficient. The goal of streamlining state agencies is essential to helping resolve another historic deficit that will continue into the next biennium. The MAPE applauds and supports responsible efforts to restructure our state government while continuing to provide efficient and essential services to the citizens of this state. When it comes to restructuring, we think we need to ask ourselves, what can we afford to lose? In all state agencies, MAPE members perform numerous services that directly benefit the public. Determining what can we afford to lose is a critical element to keep in mind as reorganization of state agencies is considered and the priority of serving the citizens of this state remains. When we think of vital services and what should be maintained, a few examples come to mind. At the Department of Labor and Industry, our members keep the workplace safe. They enforce labor laws and make sure that people are properly compensated for a hard day's work. Indeed, MAPE members process unemployment benefits. Staff call centers to help people get through to the unemployment process and help get people employed through our efforts at state workforce centers. At both agencies, MAPE members are the IT staff working to provide technological support to ensure that communication systems operate effectively. Yet, we know that times are changing, government is being scrutinized, and efficiencies need to be acted upon. This legislation is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to streamline government in difficult times. It's an opportunity for economic growth, improved delivery of services, and sustainable economic development. This bill allows union employees who do the day-to-day work in these agencies an opportunity to be part of the solution. We welcome that opportunity. We look forward to working with the legislature and other stakeholders to make sure that government agencies provide the highest quality service to Minnesotans in the most resourceful way. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the committee, these witnesses? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I have a modest amendment to the second part of the bill. I think it's A4, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, my office and I are in discussions with the Department of Administration on this. They've got some suggestions. I don't know that this adopts everything they think is necessary to make this work effectively, but it's a start, and I'm committed to continue to work with them on this. These amendments are not very this amendment is not real significant. It's got some fixes or cleanup. I need a copy.
Staff, do you want to explain the amendment by any chance, or do you know it?
Mr. Chair, members, this amendment is to Article 2, which is the Taxpayers Accountability Act. And really, it seems like the only changes are technical changes to the language, but we're deleting some language, and instead of the agency head, we're inserting the contracting agency. Prepare the comprehensive written estimate of the cost of the highest scoring proposal or lowest cost bid. And these are all for contracts that are over $100,000. And then on page 7, and again, this is pretty technical because we're deleting bid and inserting response, so it's just kind of difference between bid and response. And then again, instead of the commissioner, on line 7.3, we're inserting the contracting agency. And that's the same change we made basically on page 6, line 32.
And Mr. Chairman, these are suggestions by the agency. They are not every suggestion they have made yet. We're still working on thinking about all that. But this improves the language, and I think the agency supports all of these things.
And this is the way you want it to read anyway, right?
Right.
Okay. So, Senator.
But I'll make clear, and they may want to say something today. This is not everything they've suggested yet, but they do support everything that is in this amendment.
Okay, and Senator Sparks will move the A4 amendment. Does the agency want to comment on this or no?
And I think the operating engineers also, not related to the amendment, but after, they do want to testify on the Article 2.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Director of the Materials Management Division in the Department of Administration. These changes to the amendment are technical changes that we did suggest in a meeting with Senator Bobby Miller's staff a few weeks ago and improved the bill from our perspective. But I do need to be clear that the department still has concerns about the administrative burden and cost of implementing the bill in its current and its amended form.
In just Article 2 or the entire bill?
Our interest is Article 2 exclusively.
Okay. And where are the costs? Because I see costs in Section 7 of Article 1, but I don't see where there's.
The bill would require a state agency to do an extremely comprehensive and detailed analysis of the comparative costs of using state employees versus outside consultants. Certainly, administration agrees that the state shouldn't be hiring consultants if state employees can do the job more cost-effectively. But this bill requires an extremely detailed process before any contracting work can be done. Senator Pogermiller mentioned, and is certainly correct, that MnDOT is doing comparable analysis now. They put out a report that after their first experience with this, indicating that they had processed 49 contracts at the cost of $63,000 to do the analysis. We quickly looked at some of the numbers of how many professional technical contracts the state does. And that's a subset of all the contracts that the state does. So this isn't the full number, but in professional technical contracts alone in FY09, The state did 441.
Over 100,000.
Correct. Thank you. So if MnDOT's cost per contract proved accurate across the rest of the state agencies, the cost to do 441 of these analyses would be in excess of $500,000.
And Senator Pogo, it's my understanding that we have a preliminary fiscal note out that says nothing. So, but the actual fiscal note is due out on Friday, it looks like.
Friday.
And so I don't know if we'll hear this kind of information or not, but I suppose before we get to finance, we'll have the fiscal note out. So, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just in regards to the amendment now, because we're, let's. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of on this topic of the fiscal note and the cost.
All right.
Okay. And I guess what I was just, because a similar conversation came up with the Natural Resources Reorganization Bill that I've been carrying, and the question of whether it's appropriate to have a cost for looking at ways within the agency to reorganize and look for savings, look for ways to streamline things, make them more efficient, make them more effective. And it just seems to me that as we've been facing this budget deficit, the governor has been asking agencies to do this, and every time the agencies look at their budget to a degree, that's part of what they do. So I don't think we give the agencies extra money to analyze how we can go through this process. Now, maybe this is a little different if we're setting up a formal structure for going through this process, but I do think that in government is something we're expected to do.
I think this testimony was directly related to little over $1,000, apparently, it looked like, to create these reports. Was the history in MnDOT.
Contract of MnDOT.
Yeah, in MnDOT.
Okay, so
they were only talking to the contractual piece.
Okay.
But your comments are wonderful related to the first part of the bill. Mr. Chairman, perhaps.
Any further comments on the amendment? Because let's put the amendment on. Senator Kielash, do you want to talk about the amendment?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, the amendment, the way it reads, when you take a bid out, you have a responder's response, which for a statement, I'm not sure if that really is where you want to go with it, but it seems a little, I don't know, there's probably a better word for it than that. I'm not sure I have one, but but it seems a little bit redundant there. The other thing is, on the highest scoring proposal or lowest cost bid, I'm not sure what that does as far as the change in the current. It doesn't.
Where are you looking?
Line 1.4. We're not just looking at lowest cost, I hope, and when we're talking about whether or not a bid is going to stay within the state agency or not, primarily because if you contract it out, you lose any expertise gained in the process of doing the work that's involved in the project, and that has to be worth something to the state that's not necessarily in fiscal numbers.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I think that it appears to me that those are two types of proposals that get judged. There are some lowest cost bids. That's what the deal is. We're just looking for the lowest cost. How many widgets can you give us for that cost? And highest scoring proposal obviously is something different than that, where there's some kind of grid that they're scoring on. So I think those are technical terms in the business.
Okay.
And so that's.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Vanderbeer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogrom, I'm a little confused about the fiscal note expecting to be negative or showing cost to the state. Shouldn't the fiscal note on the bill show sort of savings?
Senator Vanderbeer, we haven't gotten the fiscal note yet.
We haven't gotten, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vanderbeer, we haven't gotten one yet. But I think what the testimony was is when the on Article 2, The experience on, it was 24, 25 contracts at MnDOT. 54, was it?
49.
49 contracts at MnDOT. It cost apparently a little over $1,000 per contract to to do these estimates, cost-benefit estimates.
Mr. Chair, Senator,
so that's what they were testifying to.
Senator Porgemiller, so we, the whole bill, though, shouldn't
is a different, that, yeah. They were only speaking to the issue of the, it obviously will has a cost for someone to go and do the cost-benefit analysis.
That part of the bill.
Right.
Yeah. And one other comment.
Usually,
looking at Section 1, all of these little things that a lot of committees, I've seen them take those out, the, you know, the purpose of the legislation.
Correct.
That should kind of be apparent within the bill. But
here, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandiver, here's the difference. Section 1 and Section 2 are what the task forces are organizing the agency for. So they look to Sections 1 and 2 to say, okay, what's our goal? What are we trying to accomplish here? So it's different in that sense. The bill is simple in the notion that it says we're setting some people in place to do some reorganization, and what Section 1 and 2 say is this is what you're supposed to be doing it for. So it's different than a purpose clause in a normal piece of legislation.
Thank you. Okay. Any further comments on the A4 amendment? Well, we've got that in front of us. Let's do the A4 amendment. Senator Sparks moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Anybody else want to testify for or against the bill? Welcome to the committee and say your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Glenn Schreiner, and I'm the president-elect for an organization called American Council of Engineering Companies. Our organization represents about 160 firms that employ about 4,500 people throughout the state. I'm also a vice president with a local engineering firm, Short Elliott Hendrickson, and we have about 400 people that are employed in the state. My testimony today is basically around amendment, or Article 2, excuse me, of the legislation, the Taxpayer Accountability Act. And there's two points that I'd like to make that I believe, we believe that amendment is not in the best interest of the public. The first one is that the amendment does not recognize the value of using the private sector in concert with the public sector to deliver efficient and effective projects within the state. The other issue is about bidding professional services, whether they're public or private, and why that isn't in the best interest. Regarding the first point about, I mean, the private sector has worked for many years and very well with the public sector in delivering projects. And we do that because, or I should say, the agencies come out and ask for our assistance for two primary reasons. One of them is because they don't have the technical expertise, so they need to outsource that. And the other one is they don't have the staff to do the work. And so they rely on us then to help deliver those projects. When an agency looks at their work, and I'm sort of speaking for the agency, but this is how we see it from when we do the work or when we get the work. They look at whether they need that expertise or the staff, the resources. They decide they need to outsource, so then they go ahead and they solicit proposals, and we go through this process, and then they select a firm. What Taxpayer Accountability Act does, it steps in at that point. And what it requires then is it's almost like second-guessing the decision that the agency made, that they don't have, you know, that they don't have the resources. And so we're spending all this taxpayer money to do this analysis. And in the end, I believe with MnDOT's, what they've done in the last year, I believe most of those, if not all those contracts, stayed in the private sector because, you know, when they went through the analysis. So from our viewpoint, from a taxpayer standpoint, once the decision is made by the agency to outsource, we're just spending taxpayer money to do this analysis. Second point on the bidding of professional services, when you hire an engineer, and again, I'm going to talk for both the public and the private sector, when you hire an engineer to do work, you're not buying a product. What you're buying or what you're getting is our knowledge. And that equates pretty much directly to the hours that we put on the project. And our that cost, and again, I'm talking both public and private, that cost is 10% of the construction cost. Usually these lead to construction. It's about 10% of that. The biggest impact to the state, to the public dollars, is the construction cost and any amendments that go over with that construction. So you're better to spend the right amount of time doing the engineering to make sure you've looked at all the issues so that you've got the best contract when you go with the contractor. And unfortunately, when you bid, you know, when we look at that, the thing that we do is we cut our hours down to the basic services. I mean, you get quality engineering. It's just that you're not getting enough engineering to look at good alternatives to make the projects more cost effective. So we oppose the bidding portion just in general between the public and private sector. There are other states that, in fact, many states, I think it's over 40, and the federal government that use a selection process that doesn't require bidding of professional services, that allows the agency to work with the engineering firm to come up with a fair scope, a fair fee that would deliver those quality services. So it can be done, and it is being done throughout the country. So we urge you to basically remove Article 2 from the bill, if you can't do that, which it probably won't, then we would ask that you amend the bill so that it exempts professional services for persons licensed under 326.02 and 326.15. And what that would do is that would exempt professional services for engineers, architects, land surveyors, landscape architects, geoscientists, and interior designers. So thank you. That's really what I wanted to make sure that you knew our position on this.
Okay. Any questions or comments for the witness? Senator Kilash.
I'm not sure if I quite get this because this is does not apply to the Department of Transportation. So is that where you're coming from on that?
For any business.
Well, this now Article 2 would apply to all state.
It does not apply to the Department of Transportation contract.
They already have it.
Because they already have it. So I'm not. It sounds to me like you're talking about architects and engineers working within that. Or, I mean, some of these services are outside the construction mode, I'm guessing, technical, you know, whether it be computer services or software experts, et cetera, within the state departments as well. Are we talking about having an issue with that, or is it just strictly to the building?
More in the building construction site, you know, the DNR, the PCA facilities, and you know, higher education buildings.
Right. And one of my questions, I guess, would be, Mr. Chair, is to we wouldn't necessarily need to contract out the complete services of an architectural firm or designer to do some of the buildings that the state is doing, but we may need expertise in one portion of that. I believe this still allows that to happen. It doesn't necessarily, and we'll be able to. One of my concerns is the constantly purchasing information and intellectual people with the expertise in a particular field, and not maintaining that expertise within the state where we're going to need it again and again and again. So we're kind of in this catch-22 where, because we have been hiring out the services, we haven't the expertise ever to get to the point where we can keep it in-house. And I think this addresses some of that.
Our intent is not to have the private sector do all the work. It's working in concert with the private sector and the public sector. And we do believe that the state agencies need expertise.
Agreed.
Because if you don't have the expertise, you're not really know what you're hiring. So, yeah, we agree on that point.
And then is your point that if you have it under this bid requirements that the engineering firms are going to go for the least amount of hours and not deliver the services, all the services the state may need in that particular project?
The engineers and the private sector would be looking at, you know, if they're trying to bid to get the work, they're going to be looking at the minimal hours. And we won't, it's not to imply that we're not going to provide the basic services. Can I say it that mm-hmm. way? If you're designing a bridge, an engineer is going to design a bridge that stands. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's this, you know, there's no way that's not going to happen.
That hasn't always happened.
Well, that's true. But, you know, that's, it's going to happen. But is that the most efficient bridge? Is that bridge, how much did it cost to build that bridge? Was there enough investigation in the foundations to make sure that they're the right, you know, piles were put in? That's the part where the bidding, you know, doesn't help. I mean, it puts a lot of risk during the construction. You want to put in the right amount of professional time to get that, the most efficient, you know, when public dollars are tough.
Mr. Schreiner, isn't that going to come out in the process? It seems like what the Taxpayers Accountability Act is trying to get at, and Senator Pogemiller can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like trying to get at is the cheapest way to do this based on who can do the work. And if, in fact, like you said, in the Transportation Department, they contracted it all out to the private sector because they could do it in a more efficient and effective manner, that's what they found out when they went through the process. And it seems to me that just objecting to having the process find out what the cheapest way to do it is sounds like it's the turf battle to me, and more than anything, as opposed to actually figuring out what the good of the taxpayer and the process is.
You know, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I believe there's a healthy debate on how much the public sector and the private sector should do. That debate should occur, and then the decision should be made, and then that's the public agencies should then plan accordingly. And then what will happen is the private sector can plan accordingly, too. We can have the right staff doing the right type of work, and then we're going to have the best people. If we wait until each project comes, no, then it's difficult to prepare the right staff for that project. So there is a healthy debate that I think can occur. It's just what we object is that it occurs on each project that comes up.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, but isn't the purpose of this bill not to have the philosophical debate of whether something should happen in the public sector or the private sector, but simply to say that when we're using taxpayers' dollars to fund a project, we should do it in the most efficient way rather than directing it specifically one way or another because of some ideology we might happen to have?
I agree, Mr. Chairman. I agree that we should be spending the public dollars in the most efficient way. When the agency, maybe I can come back to my other point, when an agency decides to outsource, it's typically because they don't have the staff to do it. So haven't they made that decision at that point? That they're efficient at a certain size in their agency, and so now they're outsourcing, and so then you use the private sector to fill that.
Senator Pogemiller.
I think that's the point here, because if they have already made the decision, if you look at section lines 2.4 to 3.0, if they have already made the decision that they don't have the people to do that job, then they're going to write a cost estimate that says, we don't have the people to do this job, we'd have to hire new people. And so I'm guessing when they put the bid out, then it's going to be pretty straightforward that the bid's going to be successful, because they've already said on the front end, we don't have the money to, you know, we don't have the bodies. So I don't think that's where the problem is, potentially. I think the problem is when there's a dispute as to whether they do have the resources internally versus externally, and someone says it's cheaper to do it outside rather than inside. Then there will be a cost estimate that says, okay, which one is factual? Let's move on.
Schreiner.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, Senator, we would prefer then that the agency make that statement that they don't have the resources before they solicit, before they send out and request the RFP. We spend a tremendous amount of time putting proposals together and chasing work. And, you know, it just adds to our overhead. It ends up adding a cost.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was thinking about that, because this notion of if you already know the answer, why do you go through the process? So I'll work with the engineers and maybe talk to MnDOT and see how that looked over there. Because, yeah, you don't want to be asking for bids when you can't get it. So,
well, okay. You know, and this is engineers and legislators talking to each other, and you know, that might not work in this particular setting right here. So,
I was pleased that the engineers didn't testify that we don't want cost benefit analysis, because that's kind of what you do. So I will work with and see if there's not something there that addresses that issue in a way that you become comfortable with it, where your group becomes comfortable, and we will talk to MnDOT and see how they've dealt with that. That exact issue.
Senator Kulesh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to Senator Pogemiller and Mr. Schreiner, one of the things that came out in Mr. Side's testimony is that MnDOT can do the striping cheaper than the private sector. So MnDOT should never hire a private sector striper on any new highway until the private sector can actually meet those cost savings. That's what I'm thinking that this review process does. It allows us to really double check to see, can we do it cheaper ourselves in-house than we can get it outside? And the only way you can find out if you do it cheaper in-house is to find out what it costs to do it outside the house first. So in those kinds of situations, and I think the partnerships that are currently going on between state agencies and the private sector can continue, because there's expertise out there in the private sector that we only need one time or two times. We don't need it all the time for every project that we're doing. And I'm not just in the construction sector, but also in many other technical fields of the computer programs that we might need to upgrade for the departments that we're looking at. I don't think it's an either-or. I think it's a cost-benefit analysis to both parties. What can the private sector offer to the state that expertise that we do not have and will never really need to acquire, because we won't use it as often as we will other skills and knowledge that we use on a regular ongoing basis that we can do cheaper in-house.
Mr. Chairman, I'm pretty comfortable we'll probably be able to come up with some language that addresses at least the specific issue that was raised there.
I'm comfortable with that, too. Mm-hmm. Senator Koch?
Can't do it right this second. But.
Thank you. Senator Pogemiller.
Is this on Article 2, or are you going back to the rest of the bill?
I'm going back to the bill.
Does anybody that want – hold on. I have just 1 second. I have a couple of people that want to say something. Are they directed to this witness?
Yeah.
Senator Vanderveer. Okay, Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It kind of is. I'm just wondering, how does it work, so I understand the process a little better maybe. If you're going to go out for decide you're going to solicit a contract, and you're looking at, first of all, then you're going to talk about whether the department could do it in the first place, whether they had the personnel, and that's what you're going to work on, or the expertise within the department to do the job. And if they don't, then they'd be going out. And what if in the process, well, in the case of the stripers, what if they're backed up and they're too busy? Is that, because as I look at outsourcing or contracting, the times you would do it was, the only time you would do it probably is when you didn't have the expertise in-house or when they were too busy to do it, and as kind of an overload situation, because you wouldn't staff up for the highest amount of work you ever had, but you'd want to keep the people you have busy and balance that out. So if you were going to outsource and you decided, well, we're doing quite a bit of this, and then you said, if we had somebody in-house who did it and you were estimating these costs, would you include then the idea of, and this is backed, I think, to what Senator Kulesh was referring to, would you go back then to assuming, seeing if you had enough work to keep somebody busy in the first place? Would that be included in any of this analysis, I guess? Because you have the two scenarios. One, you don't have the expertise. Then if you're going to decide to hire someone with the expertise because you had ongoing work.
Senator, it seems to me that's the type of thing that agencies are doing all the time. They're trying to decide how much work they have and how many employees they need. And presumably, if they are continuing to hire outside contractors because of a workload, they know that costs them more than inside, wouldn't they rationally make the decision then to bring another employee or something on it? So it seems to me that would factor in when you start getting this analysis, you'd start to think about things like that. You might find out that, let's say it was the other way around. What if you found out that it costs 31 cents to stripe with public employees and only 19 cents with outside people? Wouldn't that then start to lead you down the path of maybe we should have fewer public employees doing that unless we can do it cheaper? Mm-hmm. So I think it could work either way and should. And so I guess I was kind of following what Senator Olson was thinking, that this allows for kind of periodic kind of management to figure out, are we doing this the way we should be doing it or not, with some reality check with the private sector. And I agree, that reality check probably happens often when there's a big blip in the work and you just, there aren't enough bodies and it costs too much to hire a bunch of new people, so you do some outside work. But that's a moment where you can find out which one actually is a better way to go.
Senator Dibble?
Thanks. I think we've talked this one all the way through, and I hear Senator Pogamiller say he's going to work with the Engineers Council. That's great. And actually, there's more agreement between Senator Kielash and the Engineers Council than disagreement. I just wanted to introduce the idea, and also I've had 100 conversations about this in my office with various parties.
And you worked in this area as a outside the in the real world, didn't you?
Well, not specifically.
Okay.
I want to be sure we hang on to the idea of lease cost at the same time we hang on to the idea of value. Sometimes lease cost in the long run doesn't get you the best value. We are trying to deliver value of services to our taxpayers and to the public.
She'll give you
if something's cheapest, you know, they could just put the road in the next rainstorm. So we just need to be aware of that idea of value, and I think that's where we have
Speaking of road striping, I would like 3M to come up with a paint that you can actually see when it rains.
Oh, Mr.
At nighttime.
It's expensive.
It's expensive, but it works.
And Mr. Chair,
I
do note that there is language in the bill that allows there to be consideration of value on 7.10. It talks about the quality of the work, you know, being a factor that can be looked at in deciding not just that they're forced to go to the cheapest service.
Okay. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You
Senator Pogamiller. That's fine. I was outside. I had to step out when you started introducing your bill. I had to step out for a little bit, so I apologize if you addressed these. When you're dealing with the reorg, you're only speaking about the two agencies, Dolly and Deed.
Right.
May I ask you why you're limiting to those two agencies? I have a bill that abolishes all state agencies and then makes them come back and talk about why they, you know, how they can be more streamlined, more efficient. So why just the two agencies?
Senator Koch, it's a good question. I'm trying to do something that I can get passed through with my colleagues. And it seems like a modest approach. If we could find out that this was successful, I absolutely think it would be a smart idea to do more broadly. And I would think a governor would go, let's go. But Senator Koch, I'm freely admitting that I would be willing to do this for all agencies, but a small step might be the best way to get this into law.
Okay, and then secondly,
Senator Koch.
As I was listening, when you opened up, you said that you know, you're not necessarily directing in any certain direction, and we may not end up with one agency. But I do note on line 1.24 that as part of the goals, it includes the elimination of at least one state agency, and then Secondarily, of course, Section 5 of Article 1 abolishes deed. So it does seem, are you presupposing an outcome there?
Senator Koch, I was hoping you wouldn't point that out because the chairman, of course, thinks they might decide we need three agencies. Senator Koch, I did mention at the beginning that this does kind of indicate that probably we can get down to one agency here, but nothing about the process forces that. And it is feasible, and I think the chairman is correct. If they come back and say the best way to do this is to have three agencies, presumably the legislature and the governor will consider that. I'd be surprised if they went there, but they might. And the agencies are eliminated under this language, but only after the legislature and governor have acted next session on putting in place something that takes care of these functions. So there's not this cliff that says, you know, these agencies are gone, whether we do anything or not. The bill is structured in a way to kind of make sure everybody knows this is serious work, but doesn't create this cliff that would be irresponsible.
And, you know, Senator Koch, if we abolish all the agencies, we won't have anybody to blame when they come here, you know. So,
Mr. Chair, that's true. Well, and no, you're welcome to sign on to the bill.
I'm not sure I like signing on to this one. Senator Olson.
And therein lies, Senator Polk, and therein lies my challenge.
Senator Pocomole, you're also I'll welcome to sign on
that. Senator Olson, did you say?
Chair, no, I just wanted to follow up, and I'll actually follow up with Senator Koch later because I wanted to talk to her about that same idea on the Natural Resources Reorg Bill. It started out with sunset dates for those agencies involved, and some of the committee members in Environment thought that was too threatening, so it went away. I actually think it's a good way, just like Senator Pogemiller is doing, to make sure that people take it seriously. Not that we're not going to have something else to replace it, but that we're not just going to stick with the status quo.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Chair. As Senator Koch sort of described her bill, which I was not familiar with. I sent super note. I serve on the NCSL Transportation Committee with a representative from Texas who talks often about the Texas Sunset Commission. Every agency, every state agency in Texas actually sunsets every, I think, 6 years and has to come back and receive authorization. And that's the opportunity to make these kinds of examinations and to kind of re-justify and re-rationalize. Don't know if it's a great idea or not, and it makes opportunity for some level of mischief. Texas really goofed up its kind of tolling scheme a couple of years ago, and the legislature was so unhappy that the Department of Transportation failed to receive its authorization for a little while there. Texas did not have a Department of Transportation, and they had to come into special session and reconstitute and reauthorize the Department of Transportation. But it's an idea of maybe an amendment for Senator Koch's bill. A sunset commission.
So that's, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that is sort of the idea of the bill. Obviously, it starts out with sort of like Senator Pogemiller's sort of an end result, but the idea is that these agencies would come in and
form, Mr. Chair,
reauthorize.
A supersized zero-based budgeting, I think.
Senator Van
Der. Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I think that just proves that all tolls are bad.
Tolls.
Well, you know, I actually proposed to Governor Ventura that we put a toll road just north of Hinckley so that when you city slickers come up to use our playground, you have to pay for it. But, you know, I thought maybe we should put it south of Hinckley so that we could pick up people who go off to the casino, too. But he didn't like that idea at all. So, the not-so-obvious conclusion of all this, Senator Pogemiller, is that that these groups that come together, these employee participation committees and all the rest of the groups that are in here, may find out that by changing things around, there are no savings, there's not a way to better deliver the services, and you may not result in getting better results by changing everything around or not changing anything. So I'm open to allowing this to go out of this committee if the committee votes for it, because I'd be interested to see what kind of conclusion that these groups come to if it does get enacted into law. So I don't know if anybody else has any more comments or questions on for Senator Pogemiller. So, Senator Koch, would you like to move this bill then?
Well, I think Senator Vandiver is a co-author.
I'll move it.
Okay, Senator Vandiver, then we'll move that Senate File 2874 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further comments or questions? Anybody in the audience like to make any comment for, or against, or about the bill? Seeing nothing, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pogemiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, appreciate it.
Members, there's a possibility we could have a few more hearings. Cap, what do we know about that? Anything?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe there's a fairly likely we'll try to have one hearing next week, and I'm hoping that that will be the last hearing.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.
The way it's written, it makes you wonder what the process already is.